sound in here. This is a Marine helicopter going by. We have a lot of helicopter traffic around here, and of course we have a lot of jets too, so if you hear a little noise in the background, sorry about that, but I can't get away from it. Well, let's see, where was I? Oh, I was telling you about our operations here. One thing I was going to tell you about, the other day when I was running all those airstrikes, of course it was a pretty long mission. I took off at about 5:30 in the morning, and this airplane will stay up for about 4 hours. Well, I was going on 4 hours as it was, and I had an AO with me in the back seat. That's an artillery observer. He was an Army major. And what these guys do is they know where all the artillery is firing from, and they keep track of the artillery and warn me if my airplanes or myself, my jets or myself, are getting in the road of the artillery fire. A lot of times we use artillery fire along with our jet strikes, and a lot of times they are running at the very same time, although usually we try and set off the artillery while the strike itself is in progress, especially if they're going to be flying through what's called the GT line, the gun target line. In this case, of course, we like to keep the artillery shut off. Well, anyway, we were coming back. I was taking him back to Duck 4 to drop him off, and we were running very short on fuel, and Duck 4 doesn't have any fuel for us yet. They're just now getting the strip complete. So we went up to Quang 9. I went into Quang 9 because I was pretty sure I didn't have enough fuel left to get Carolyn up to Chu Lai here, and I didn't want to have to stick it in down there in VC territory. So I found the to Quang 9 to refuel. This is where the Rock Marines are located and where my old buddy George Buckner is. I tried to look him up while I was getting refuel and getting some more rockets loaded on board, but he was out in the field with the Marines at the time. He was staying out at the command post, so I didn't get to see him, but sooner or later I'm sure I will, because we're only about 25 clicks apart. I did explain what click is, didn't I? A click is a kilometer. We call them clicks. So you'll hear me say clicks every once in a while. Some of this Army lingo also, so you'll have to get used to it. Anyway, I was sorry I didn't get to see him, but I did see one of the other faction and told him that I had stopped in to see him. Told him to tell George I'd stopped in to see him, and we'll get together one of these days. Apparently he's doing real good work with the Marines. The facts spoke very highly of him, and I guess he's doing a real good job there. I've been seeing a lot of my old buddies over here. It's sort of like old home week. All over Vietnam, just about, it seems. No matter where I go, I run into somebody I know. For instance, here at Task Force Oregon, the director of the Air Force version of the intelligence, which they call G2, is a Captain Barnard. Captain Barnard was in the class of 59 at the Academy. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, he had the distinction of being the last man to graduate in 59. He was the lowest man in the class, and I found this rather humorous in that he is now the intelligence officer for this whole task force. He's doing a good job, though, and he's a pretty good troop, and I think that evidently this is his line of work, because he seems really interested in it. I thought that was kind of funny. I noticed in the Stars and Stripes last week that I guess he's probably the first of our bunch of facts to get killed over here. His name was Vandevenner. He was with us at 100 at Luke, and also went to fact school at Hurlbutt with us. I had heard about us losing a fact down in 3 Corps, but I didn't know who it was, but it must have been him, and I noticed his name in the paper here. He was a real good kid. I'm sure sorry to hear about it. We've had pretty good luck over here, actually. The facts, concerning the number of hours we fly, we have a very low fatality rate, or even a hit rate. We do get hit once in a while with gunfire, but it takes a lot to bring one of these little airplanes down, surprisingly enough, unless they get a direct hit right on our engine or something. But we fly about 60 to 70% of all the flying hours in Vietnam is flown by the facts. considering that large amount of hours that we fly, we actually have a very low percentage of hit rates and guys going in. So I offer that as a word of encouragement. we consider our operation really pretty safe. We don't go down low, below 1,500 feet in particular, since this is the area that we become very vulnerable to small arms fire, and most of the equipment that the Viet Cong and NVA have are small arms. They don't have too many large guns here like they have up north. So by staying about 1,500 feet, we avoid most of this ground fire. And of course, if we have to go down low to take a look, we will, if it's important and troops are in conflict or something like that. But we avoid this if possible. And this is one thing that's helped improve our accident rate. Surprisingly enough, we have lost more of our old ones over here from guys just screwing around with the airplane and just pilot error type problems than we have from being shot down by the enemy. It seems that too many guys take this little airplane as being some kind of a toy, and they get to horsing around with it and trying to do things they used to do in fighters, and they just don't want. And they find out that the hard way, it seems. For instance, here about a month ago, we lost a guy who tried to do an aileron roll after takeoff. Well, acrobatics are prohibited in this airplane in the first place, and although it is possible to do an aileron roll, to do it right after takeoff is pretty stupid in any event. And this type of thing is just ridiculous, and there's no way of condoning this type of action. And all you can say in this case is that I guess he had it coming. Well, let's see, I've been doing a lot of sitting off with the mouth here, and I was trying to think of see what the things I wanted to tell you about. Got a lot of tape here left, so I guess I can take my time. I was going to tell you a little bit. Oh, you said you hadn't heard from Joe or Wayne and Mary. Joe was telling me that they had a real good time while Wayne and Mary were there. I guess Pammy in particular had a little hard time adjusting to the fact that she thought that Wayne was me at first, and she just didn't want to accept the fact that that wasn't Daddy. She told Wayne, she said, "I want you to be my Daddy." And Wayne would explain to her that no, that this wasn't Daddy, that he was Uncle Wayne. And so she finally came around to accepting it, I guess, and Joe said it was kind of sad at first, but Beth and Pam just enjoyed it tremendously, having their cousins, they call them, their cousins. And they took them around and introduced them to all their kid friends around the neighborhood there. And apparently they followed them around wherever they went, all over town. They always wanted to go with Wayne and Mary. So Joe said it was really kind of good for him to go with them for a while. Joe was saying that it sounds like Mary is going to stay in Denver, and is going to try and get a teaching job at Brighton High School. I'm not sure where that's located, but somewhere around the Denver area, apparently. That would be real nice if she could get a job there. It would be real nice for her and Joe to be able to get together once in a while, I'm sure. Joe was telling me that Mert has talked to her. Mert Hall, I think you remember him, has talked to her about taking over as secretary for a corporation. Joe has done a lot of business type typing, of course, and has worked in the mortgage business some down at Western Savings when we were in Arizona, so she's very capable of filling this type of job, and it would be something for her to do, give her just a few hours now and then each day, and also she would probably go with Matt when they made business transactions for land and things. And of course, since it's our corporation, we have a very personal interest in. Joe's real interested and sounds like she's going to take Mert up on it. And I told her, here's to her. I thought it was a real good idea. I was glad to hear. I was certainly glad that Mert had thought about her and had asked her to do it. We have already acquired some land around the area there. I'm not sure where it is, but Mert has picked up a couple of parcels of land already, so our corporation's starting to move into high gear now. We hope, anyway. And Joe has also been checking in and taking some art courses this summer. She hasn't found any that she liked yet. She wanted to take a sculptor course, but it was too many hours each night, and she didn't want to be away from the kids that long, so she decided not to take advantage of it. She's also been checking into sending Bethy to what's called a preschool. I'm not sure exactly what they do, but apparently they take them on little field trip things, and I don't know, it's kind of like kindergarten, I guess, but Bethy's real excited about it, and Joe's been looking into it. I'm not sure just what all it's going to entail. I'll tell you a little more about it later when I find out about it myself. Joe made a tape, and then she had the kids talk on the other side of the same tape. And it was really cute hearing Buck and Pam talking into it. Pam thought that I would answer Buck, just like in the telephone. And she would say something like, hi, Daddy, and then she'd tell me something, and she'd ask me a question, and I wouldn't answer, of course. And Joe was trying to explain to her that I couldn't talk back to her, and that she'd have to wait until I sent a tape back. That was all right. It was really kind of funny. It was kind of sad, too, because she was getting so frustrated because I wouldn't answer. And then they sang me a couple songs, and Bradley, he laughed a lot, made a lot of noises, but then he just laughed at the... And he tried to grab the mic every time Joe would hold it up to his... That's where he could talk into him, and then he'd reach out and try and grab it. And she'd have to... She'd tell him, no, no, get away from him. Well, it's really good to hear from him, and it's sure nice to have this setup out here. It's really great being able to hear you all. The letters are nice, too, of course, but I really enjoy these tapes. And I must say it's easier than writing also, and you get a lot more on one. I'm hoping that your tape is working out real good for you. I've got Joe's ordered. It's on the way now. The first one I ordered, they were out of stock, and so I've had kind of a delay. And I've ordered her another one from Japan. It's called an Aiwa, A-I-W-A. It's supposed to be a real nice little outfit, and I'm sure Joe's going to enjoy it. In the meantime, she's been using one that belonged to a friend, and it's worked out pretty well. She was telling me that during the big snow, why they, of course, they lost all the electricity and everything, so they went over to their folks's, and their folks had their electricity off for a while, but she took all their food, especially meat, and put it in their deep freezer, and it kept it until electricity came back on, so we didn't lose any food out of it anyway. And she was telling me about how it got so cold, and they all got together in the basement, and they had a whole bunch of candles going down. Donnie had saved up a bunch of candles and bottles and things, and so he put them all around the basement, and then also I think Ray went and got some kind of a little oil burner or something. So they managed to stay warm, and the kids thought it was all real great, you know, all these candles burning and everything. They were all excited, and they just thought it was tremendous. They got a big kick out of it, and so I guess they weathered the storm without any great difficulties. I was just thinking that this month is when Charlie Stubbins starts the pilot training. He's going down to Webb Air Force Base where Wayne was. And I think that'll really be interesting, seeing old Charlie going through pilot training. He'll be not only probably the oldest guy to ever go through pilot training, but one of the very few that has a PhD to go along with it, which is quite interesting. So I've mentioned they already give him a real haze job down there, especially about losing his hair and everything. Wayne always rails him about it. I'm sure he'll do a real good job, and really hoping he doesn't have any troubles down there. Say, Dad, it sounds like you're staying right in there on the golf game. Glad to hear that you're staying with it. And it sounds like Wayne's really getting his game down in good shape, too. I know he was hitting the ball real well when we were down in Florida. I haven't got to play since we were in the Philippines. I really did enjoy playing a day there on their course, which is real pretty. And I even had a caddy. That's the first time I've ever had a caddy. It's kind of big time, huh? They're very reasonable. The Filipinos the Filipino boys do the caddying there. And I think it's $1 or so for 18 holes. It's real nice. Also, when you're on a strange course, these guys know the course real well, and they can tell you about what irons to use. So it was really very enjoyable. But I'm afraid my golf game is going to be sadly lacking for the next year here, since golf isn't a very popular sport over here. Apparently the French show played tennis. just about everywhere we go, we can find tennis courts, but no golf courses at all. Of course, we wouldn't have the time and would be probably rather reticent to get out on a golf course in this country anyway, because you never quite know when someone's going to take a pot shot at you if you ever get off base or get out in an area by yourself. You just never travel by yourself over here off base at all. And in fact, you usually don't travel off base, period, except by airplane. Some areas now are becoming pretty secure, though, such as around Natreng. It's relatively safe in that whole area around Natreng. You can go into town, and it's no big problem, although even then we usually stay in groups of at least three or four. We don't get into big groups. That's just as bad as little groups, because then you're inviting somebody to throw a bomb. So you kind of got to learn the rules over here. In this particular area, all up and down this coastline here from Duck Fall up here to Chu Vai, the villages are infested with Viet Cong, and none of them are safe after dark, and the highway isn't either, Highway 1. But during the daytime, it's just sort of half safe. It's not really too safe to travel in these areas, even in the daytime. We've already had a couple of what they call command detonated type mines. They put a mine in a road and they can stand off at a distance, and it isn't the kind where a truck runs over and it goes off. They can make it go off whenever they want to by just pushing a little plunger. And they have been using these quite a bit up in here, and we had one of our jeeps down at the 101st Airborne down at Duck Fall was blasted by one of these command detonated mines. The driver came out pretty lucky, really. All it did was blow his boots off, and it hurt his feet some, but he's going to come out of it okay, I guess. And we usually put sandbags in the bottom of our jeep floors. It helps absorb the shock of these mines, and this helps a lot to save your legs. In the bigger trucks, of course, why, the mines usually don't do anything except blow up the tires or just disable a truck, but in a jeep you're a little more vulnerable since they're pretty light and close to the ground. One of our biggest problems then in this valley is going to be the pacification of these villages and to get them all to come over to our side and to not harbor the VC. Usually, sometimes we have to get a little bit nasty about this, and we work with villages. And we have these groups called CIDG, which is Civil Indigenous, let's see, Civil Irregular, it's a Civil Irregular Defense Group. And these are people that just go around and work with the civilians and try and get them to cooperate with our movement. And of course we have Vietnamese and Americans in these groups. And it's a real problem trying to get some of these villages to cooperate, and if we, after a lengthy period of time, they still continue to harbor the VC, then we fly over in one of our, what we call speak boats. It's these little U-10s that have loudspeakers on them. They fly over the village and they'll say, okay, everybody clear out of this village because at 12 o'clock tomorrow we're going to blow it off the map. And that's just exactly what we do, which may seem a little cruel, but let's face it, war is hell, and it is cruel, and if we can't get them to cooperate, and if they continue to hide the VC, and it continues to be a VC village, then we just blow it off the map. Of course, we warn the people first and tell them all to get out, which they usually do, since they know we mean business, and then we just obliterate the village, and this solves the VC problem. It's kind of a hard way, but and of course, a lot of this is, I don't suppose, in the news very much. We don't like to publicize this type of thing, but it's the Vietnamese who have agreed to do this. In fact, they insist that we do it. And of course, we're always working for the Vietnamese. This is something we must never forget, that it's their war, not ours. And so it is at their suggestion that we do this, and it's always with their approval. We can do no bombing over here without Vietnamese approval, of course. And I think a lot of people in the States lose track of this site sometimes. They seem to think it's our war, but it isn't. It's their war. And you have to keep looking at it from their point of view. And also, you have to remind yourself, but it has been there more now for about 20 to 25 years. And you have to put yourself in their shoes sometimes when you get frustrated with them. And just stop and think of what it would be like if you had been fighting in your country for the last 20 to 25 years. You can see why they get pretty tired of it and why they just kind of tend to take this as an 8-to-5 type war and let's go back to our family at night. To them, it's become almost a way of life, it seems. Well, let's see, I've been doing an awful lot of rambling here. I'm trying to think of some other things that I wanted to tell you about. I'm glad to hear, folks, that you're planning to come out to see my family in August. I know they'll really enjoy having you, and I'm sure you'll have a good time. I imagine by then Ray will have their cabin pretty well finished up, too. It sounds like he's planning right now to go ahead and put the floor in and the walls on the inside thing. So it should be fixed up real nice, and that'd be real nice for you to be able to go up there for a few days. Of course, they're always glad to have you use it. And, also, let's see, Joe is planning to go back with her folks to Iowa. One of her relatives is getting married. In fact, I think it was the gal that played the organ at our wedding this summer in July, I think it is. So that'll be a welcome diversion for her. And then, of course, you're coming out there in August, and then in September, we're planning to meet in Hawaii. Now, of course, this will depend on how lucky I am. I'm pretty sure I'll be able to go, but your priority depends on your what's called your DROS. That's the all-important thing over here. DROS is your date of effective rotation overseas. And this means is this is the date when I came over, and of course it's based on a year from now. So in other words, it's kind of like a seniority system, and whoever has been here the longest has the most seniority as far as getting to go where he wants on his R&R. So if I, at 6 months, apply to go to Hawaii, and there's a guy that's been here 7 months and he wants to go, well, he'll get the slot rather than me. And of course, there are a certain number of slots each month allotted for Hawaii, and so I may have to wait until my 7th or 8th month to build up enough seniority to be able to get a slot to Hawaii. Is that clear? Wonderful. Okay. Well, so anyway, sooner or later, we're going to get together in Hawaii, and we're making big plans for it, and really looking forward to it. And everybody that's ever gone says it's just great, and we don't care if we spend $1,000, we're going to go. Speaking of money, that's one thing that is kind of a good deal over here is being able to save money. Living with the Army, you just can't hardly spend any money because you don't spend any money on food since you eat with the Army, and so that doesn't cost you anything. And of course, you're living in a tent, so that doesn't cost you anything. And I'm also receiving TDY since I'm in the field. I'm considered on a TDY basis, so I'm receiving per diem. And of course, I'm getting combat pay and also a tax deduction. So it's a money-making proposition over here. And I probably spend anywhere from $10 to $15 a month. That's my living cost. Pretty good deal, huh? And I'm being able to bank the rest, and of course Joe is using some of it to pay off our furniture. We still haven't sold the car, at least we hadn't. Last time I knew, we've put it on a lot, and it seems like nobody wants a big old car anymore, so we're having a little bit of a problem. We're hoping to get about $500 for it. So if you know of anybody that wants to buy a good Lincoln for $500, give Joe a car and we'll sell it right there and then. It's such a nice car, it sure seemed to sell it for so little money, but it just seems that there's no market for that type of car anymore, I'm afraid. So darling, if you got any buddies that want a good deal, have them call Joe, okay? Well, it sounds like you're enjoying your new shift, darling, and I'm sure the change of hours was a welcome change for you, and I'm hoping that you can convince them of your great talents and swing a razor one of these days, too, of course. And it sounds like you had a real good time in KC, and I'm sure you enjoyed the Playboy Club, as we always do. And I'm sure that Doris Lauren got a big bang out of it, too. Sounds like old Bud is staying at it. I had heard that he was getting a little disappointed and might not finish the demo work, but it sounds like he's struggling on, and I'm glad he's sticking with it since he's made a commitment this far. And I'm sure it'll pay off in the long run for him. And of course, if this is what he really wants, that's the most important thing. We have an awful lot of pilots over here who are talking about going to the airlines, and of course the money is a big attraction there. And usually the first year or two is pretty lame, and after that, the guys have been doing pretty good money-wise, but I don't know, myself, I just can't quite see it. I just don't think I could enjoy that type of life as much as I enjoy the variety and the type of work that I do here in the military. I guess I just wasn't cut out to be a truck driver, hauling people back and forth from A to B. The money may be good, but the job satisfaction would be so low that I don't think I could enjoy it. And of course, Joe is pretty much military-oriented, too, and she enjoys this type of life. So I think we're pretty well committed to the military ourselves. And a lot of people really can't understand that, I guess, but it's just a real good way of life as far as we're concerned, and we certainly enjoy it. It looks like if I get what I ask for, we may be living here in the Pacific for a while. In order to avoid going back to ATC, which I don't really want to do, and which I probably will have to do if I come back to the States, they have a deal set up out here called a Concurrent Overseas Tour. And of course, this can be to either Europe or the Far East, but in particular, they prefer the Far East for us that have already been here and are associated with the problems and with PACAF and with all the things that have to do with the area over here. They like to keep us here. So what they do is give you kind of a precedence and let you kind of a priority on assignments if you volunteer for this type of tour. They will try and get you to stay in the command. And of course, I want to stay in fighters, and this is about the best way to do it. So what I've asked for is either F-4Cs or F-100s, concurrent PACAF tour. And this would mean that we would, if I get it, I would either be stationed probably either in the Philippines or Japan. And this would be maybe a 2 or 3 year tour in fighters. And of course, I don't know exactly if this will come through, but if it does, well, it will enable me to get a full fighter tour, which is what I was hoping to get when I went to 100s in the first place. After that, of course, then I'll probably start getting into staff where I can go back to school and things like that. But I would like to get one more fighter tour under my belt while I'm young enough to enjoy it, the rather strenuous life of a fighter pilot. So, I'm kind of hoping in that direction right now, and Joe thinks it sounds real fine, and I think once he gets used to the type of climate over here, it won't be too bad for her. And it's fully modern in the Philippines. They have air conditioning and everything on base is real nice, so I really think she'll enjoy it if we do swing it to her like that. Well, that's in the long future, but I just thought I'd tell you about what we're working on anyway. And there's a high possibility, of course, that I may come back to Air Training Command because they are very short on instructors, and they're yanking people back like mad. So I'm not keeping my fingers crossed, and of course, I'm not going to be bitterly disappointed or anything, but I will be disappointed because I would like to stay in fighters since I do enjoy that type of flying so much. Well, I see once again my tape is about to run out. Keep up the good work with the tapes, and keep sending them to me every once in a while. I sure do appreciate them, and Darren, I would sure enjoy some of your good classical-type listening music, too. I really look forward to that, and of course, as you know, 3 3/4 works much better for music, and I'm sure that's why you plan to tape it out. But I highly recommend it. Joe tried taping some of 1 7/8, and it didn't come off too well. Of course, the frequency response is pretty poor at that slow of speed. So, we'll be seeing you. I'll say we'll be hearing from you, I hope, in the not too distant future, and I'll be trying to get some tapes off to you from time to time also. I think maybe in the future I'll tape at 3 3/4 because I sure have to shoot a lot of bull to fill up one of these with 1 7/8. Fortunately, I had a lot to talk about now. But on a regular basis, I probably won't have this much to say. So in the future, I'll probably tape at 3 3/4, so I'll put a note in if I do. Well, I guess that's about it then. and say hello to the Martins for me. And if you get over there one of these times, why, you can always take a tape along too. Maybe they can pick up a tape one of these times too. As a matter of fact, I could get them one fairly reasonable over here if they were interested. I could get them one from anywhere from about $20 to $35, a real good little tape recorder. The one I got Joe was $35, and it's has just about everything you could ask for in a small tape. Well, I guess that's about it then. It's sure good to hear your tape once again, and thanks a lot for the letters. Keep them coming, and I'll try to get them off to you as often as I can. We do have some spare time, and I can always take this tape recorder down to the beach too, so how about that? I can sit there and enjoy the sun and have fun making tapes. It's really not a bad deal. Well, we'll be seeing you. Bye-bye now.